Hey, welcome to Tara Marie Live. How are you? I am your host, Tara Marie Segundo, here on this Friday evening, coming to you from New York City. I'm coming to you from our beautiful Times Square studio, right in the heart of New York City. There's a lot happening in the city today, hustling and bustling. I actually almost made it late to the show today. I was telling my producer, Sabrina, I was in the subway, and out of nowhere, they just decided to hold us at a stop for 4 minutes. So I was sweating blood, just hoping I would get here on time. But I'm here. We've got a great show planned for you. And those of you who are regular listeners, you know what to expect. My show, Tara Marie Live, it's about mental, emotional, physical, social, and spiritual health. My background personally is in exercise physiology. For 30 years now, I've been working in the fitness industry. I'll be 50 on July 3rd. When I was 19 years old in college, I started working as a fitness instructor. I got a bunch of certifications, finally got a master's degree in applied physiology, and have been working with individuals or groups for 30 years now in the fitness business. And as I always tell the story as it goes, when I really started working, especially one-on-one with people, I didn't really notice this so much when I was working with groups, but when I really started working one-on-one with people in a very concentrated way, I noticed that I had to quickly get really good at getting into their heads, because a lot of people either would not tell me the whole story, or they would tell me a story, and it was a story that had more to do with their fitness and their bones and their muscles and their body fat and their blood, et cetera, et cetera. So I had to learn that the body's really an integrated system. We're looking again at the mental, the emotional, the physical, the social, and the spiritual sides as people. All of that we all have going on 24 hours a day. Many of us, we pay a lot of attention to the physical. We go to the gym, we eat well, we take care of our body in that sense. But our soul is dying. We're not giving attention to our soul, to our spiritual health. A lot of us pay attention to the soul, the spiritual health, but we kind of let our bodies go to pot. We gain weight. We don't pay attention. We don't take time to take care of ourselves because we're taking care of everyone else. And so again, these things have to kind of peacefully coexist. I don't think you can have real mental health if your body's going to pot. Sometimes at your own hand, because you're just not paying attention to it, or you're doing things that are bringing you down. I don't think you can have a healthy body if your soul and your spirit are sick. So I try to, with this program, bring to you information and guest experts that will enhance these areas of your lives, mental, emotional, physical, social, spiritual. And with that in mind, today I want to talk about mental health. Mental health is something that often in this country we kind of skirt around. In this country, there's really a great stigma about mental health. And those of us who suffer with mental illness, any mental illness, even depression, feel stigmatized. Sometimes we stigmatize ourselves. Sometimes we feel stigmatized by others. Most specifically, today's topic is bipolar disorder. All right. It used to be called manic depression. When I was growing up, I know that's what it was called. I don't remember when, but then it got switched to being called bipolar disorder in the medical community. Now, in the Latino community, there's obviously a very deeply rooted mix of cultural and socioeconomic factors that have sort of conspired to stigmatize people with mental illness, and in many cases, causing them and their families to delay seeking help or prevent seeking help whatsoever. Now, although the rates of mental illness among Latino and whites in the U.S. are basically equivalent, according to everything I looked at, whites are far more likely to receive mental health treatment. A statistic I found from 2008 says about 60% more likely is the white population to reach out and get treatment than, for instance, the Latino population. Now, according to an older Surgeon General's report, this is back in 2001, only 20% of Latinos with psychological disorders consult a general health care provider about their symptoms, and only 10% contact a mental health specialist. So still, again, the problem seems to be we're having problems, but we Latinos are not reaching out to get the help. Now, when Latinos think of mental illness, they think of just one thing, really. We think loco, right? Nobody wants to be considered. It's true. Pablo's laughing in the control room. Everybody's laughing, but it's true. Latinos, when they hear mental illness, they think she's a loco, she's a loquita, he's loco. Latinos don't want to be labeled, and they don't want to be labeled as the family with a relative who's nuts. So sometimes we just don't say anything. Now, these beliefs really represent a very serious public health concern when you think about it, because there are at least, I think it's greater now, 55 million Latinos. What is it, Sabrina? 55, 57 million Latinos living in this country. And we are the largest and the fastest growing minority group. So if we're experiencing mental illness to any degree, and there are many mental illnesses, all kinds of mood disorders, anxiety disorders, bipolar disorder, depression, psychoses, all sorts of things, schizophrenia. If we're having this, we're the largest ethnic population in this country. If we're having these problems, we're not getting help, we're not getting diagnosed, we're not getting treated. That presents a huge problem to this country. The Latino population has risen nearly 40% just in the last decade. And it's expected to make up close to one third of this nation's inhabitants by the year 2050. So again, by 2050, one third of this country is going to be Latino. If we're walking around with undiagnosed and untreated mental illness, it is going to present a national crisis. And you can bet on that. So this is a quote by a gentleman named William Vega. He's a PhD. So he's Dr. William Vega. He's a provost professor at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles and also a leading expert on mental health among Latinos. He says, and I quote, "The stigma is a phenomenon that's fairly complicated. It's a major question in the field as to how to manage it because there are so many cultural nuances. Research and anecdotal evidence," which is just anecdotal, making note of evidence, it's not necessarily research-based, "suggests that the stigma and what's known as really the self-stigma that I said, meaning something we impose on ourselves, is really a major factor standing in the way of mental health care for Latinos." And like I said, by 2050, which is going to come quicker than we all think, one third of us are going to be Latinos in this country. If we're all walking around with undiagnosed mental disorders, it's going to be a nightmare here in this country. Here's another quote. This is from Jane Delgado, PhD. She's actually a clinical psychologist, and she happens to be the president of the National Alliance for Hispanic Health. I've got my Sabrina, my producer. She's going to look into finding her for me because she's, again, the National Alliance for Hispanic Health. She's the president of all of that. She says, and I quote, "Even more so than American culture as a whole, Latino culture values self-reliance, which can discourage people from talking about their problems." She said that. Now, here's some good news. I think we are starting to talk, right? Recently, 22-year-old singer and actress Demi Lovato, who most of us know Demi Lovato, she shed light on the presence of bipolar disorder in the Latino community. She herself has bipolar disorder. She described her own battle with this medical problem that triggers extreme mood swings, manic episodes, suicidal tendencies, irritability, and dependence on antidepressants and other medications. She's talked about it very publicly. She says, quote, "Bipolar depression really got my life off track. But today I'm proud to say I'm living proof that someone can live, love, and be well with bipolar disorder when they get the education, the support, and the treatment they need." So my goal with this show is to start a conversation. Let's break the stigma about mental illness in general. But again, today we're talking specifically about bipolar disorder. But let's break the stigma by talking about this topic, which I think is really the only way to break the stigma, to talk about something. And let's all get the help that we need. So my guest today is a returning guest. You may know her name. She was last on back in January. But she's Dr. Carol Berman. She's a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU Medical Center, which is here in Manhattan in New York City. She's also in private practice, and she's the author of two books in her field. Today, again, we're not talking about one of her books, but she also writes for the Huffington Post online, and she does have an article there that I'll direct you guys to as we get into the show. So again, we're talking about bipolar disorder with an eminent psychiatrist here in New York City. So welcome, Dr. Carol Berman.
Hi, how are you doing today?
How are you?
I'm very fine, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm good. I was glad to do this show. You know, you're a psychiatrist. And you're in private practice, but you also teach psychiatry at NYU Medical Center, and you have you've been doing this for a while. How many years have you been a psychiatrist?
I've been a psychiatrist since 1985.
Yeah, so you've got long history. You've got, what is that then, 30, you've got also got 30 years in the business.
About 30 years.
Yeah, about 30 years doing this. I wanted to talk about this because I feel sad that we're still dealing with a stigma in this country with respect to this disease.
It's horrible. There's still a stigma. It's 2015, and it's still a stigma to have any kind of mental illness, not only in the Hispanic community, but in America, all over the world, it's a problem.
Right. Right. Is it, I don't know if you know much about other countries with respect to their attitudes, but is there any area of the world where it's less of a stigma? Because I don't understand. I mean, to me, when I think of a mental illness, I think of a mental illness like if someone has diabetes, if someone has an illness in their body. I don't differentiate. Is there any area
exactly
in the world?
The way to think of it. Yeah. Now, in terms of the world, I think that actually in America, we're doing the best in terms of getting rid of the stigma. For instance, in China, you know, they don't even talk about it. Russia, they punish people, you know, who have any kind of mental illness. I don't know about Africa and many other countries, but I think Europe might be about the same as America. I'm not sure, but I think actually we're doing better here than any place else.
Thank God.
We're not doing so well either.
No. But I think the way to destigmatize it, I was proud when, you know, Demi Lovato, who's Latina, I was proud when she stepped out. She's 22. I think it's very brave of her as a celebrity to step out and say, look, I've got this. I mean, Catherine Zeta-Jones has bipolar disorder. It's not that uncommon. And
I think that's the way it's going to go. When the celebrities step out and say, I've got this, I've got that, then other people could step out and say they have it.
Exactly. Now, I myself, I've struggled with clinical depression. I don't have bipolar disorder, but I have clinical depression. And I know that, and I want people to understand. So today we're talking about bipolar specifically. But fair to say, the information we give today, many of the things we talk about with respect to, because I'm going to talk about some, you know, natural ways for kind of mental hygiene. Fair to say that a lot of these things that help with bipolar disorder, just behaviorally, supplement wise, eating wise, probably overlap and also help with depression as well. Would you fair to say?
Oh, that's right. I would say so too. Definitely. We have to get everything in order and then specific things in order for bipolar disorder.
Right. All right. So why don't we just from the top. Oh, and I want to give out the call in line, you guys, because if there's anybody who's suffering, I've got a professor of psychiatry with me, so she's a psychiatrist. The call in line, excuse me, I'm on the air, ma'am. That's the housekeeper, just to open the door. The call in line is 888-411-7242. I think we have a new housekeeper here in the studio, Carol. 888-411-7242. That's the call in line. If you're suffering or if someone you love is suffering, don't hesitate to call. Because this is Dr. Carol Berman. She's the person to help you. So, Dr. Berman, what is bipolar disorder? Can you just give us a definition? Because I think that it can be a little bit nebulous. People don't understand.
Sure. Bipolar disorder is a brain disorder with extreme shifts in mood and energy. So it's not just normal ups and downs, but extreme shifts, and it could be quite debilitating.
Now, with extreme shifts, okay, so I'm just thinking about, so you're talking basically to a largely Latino audience where it's more, I think, and correct me, I mean, you guys, Pablo, Sabrina, I mean, just in normal Latinos, we have extreme shifts. Do you know what I'm saying? Like
you don't have such extreme shifts as bipolar people have. I mean extreme, like, for instance, we're going to get into manic episodes and depressive episodes. But a manic episode could be so extreme that a person starts hallucinating and they start seeing things, they start hearing things, and, you know, they could go wild with it. So you're not getting that extreme a shift.
well, I think that we, because I'm Cuban, Lebanese, and Sicilian.
Okay.
I've been told, and, you know, and I look around, like I know people who are, I dated a guy once who was a WASP, right? And I found it uncanny. I remember I've told this story before. I went to a holiday meal. And I was in shock the whole time because everyone used an indoor voice the whole time. There was not one fight that broke out. Do you know what I mean? Like, in other words, we tend to be a very emotional people. So, again, define, like, with bipolar disorder and the extremes, what are the extremes that we're looking for if we're trying to define it?
Okay, I'm talking about an extreme manic episode where a person would be running in the street. I had one patient. I used to work up at St. Luke's Hospital on 114th in Amsterdam, and they have a big Latino population up there. So I saw a lot of Latino people, but only in extreme cases, so that you know, in everyday life, they didn't mind ups and downs. But, for instance, one gentleman was standing out on Broadway around near Columbia University. He was directing traffic because he became very grandiose, and he started thinking that he had powers to direct traffic, and he's standing in the middle of the street. He almost got killed because he's saying, okay, this traffic goes this way. He wasn't directing it very well either. The horns were honking, and everybody was all excited. And then the guy was wearing, like, I think he wasn't even wearing shorts. He was wearing, like, a long shirt, and he had nothing underneath, and he was totally disheveled. And so the police brought him over to St. Luke's, and we put him in the emergency room, in the psych emergency room, and we had to give him a lot of medication. And we had a translator, because actually he was talking Spanish, and I can't talk that much Spanish or I could understand him. But he was all disoriented, and the translator said, I don't know what he's saying.
May I interrupt and ask this, though? See, again, because you're a psychiatrist, in that episode, this is when you were working in a hospital, I imagine, at a psych ward.
Right.
There are people, there are those of us who are walking around. I mean, I'm thinking the Demi Lovatos, the Catherine Zeta-Jones. They're not necessarily in psych wards, but they suffer with bipolar disorder. So first thing we should probably say straight off is this is a spectrum situation, correct? You've got people.
That is.
Yeah. There are those of us who have bipolar disorder who are functional. We hold down jobs. We're not admitted to the psych ward. And then we have ups and downs. And then that spectrum goes all the way to those who end in a psych ward. So for this, let's kind of keep it to those of us who are more so walking around, because the ones that are in psych wards probably are already there, or their family recognizes that they need to be in a psych ward. What would an average person who's listening, who has bipolar, if somebody said to you, doctor, what is bipolar disorder? I think I may have it. Can you explain what it would look like? How would it present to an everyday person?
Okay, to an everyday person, it might just present itself like excessive shopping. Like I have one lady who just does excessive shopping. She'll go into a store, and she's a middle-class lady, doesn't have too much money, and she'll be shopping and buying a lot of underwear and clothes and shoes. And then she gets it home, puts it in her closet. She never uses it. And then she overspends. She maxes out her credit cards. And I have another person who gambles. He can't afford to gamble, but he's always, like, playing the horses and playing all kinds of things, lotto. And he just maxes out his credit cards. He doesn't have enough money for anything. So overspending is a sure sign of it. So you might see it like that in an average person seeing that. Or, you know, they could be very talkative, like blah, 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 blah. They're talking. They don't let you get a word in edgewise.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep on talking. They could be awake all the time, not sleeping, running around like with all this energy. You can't believe what energy they have until they crash into the depression. But they could be up all night. They could have, they get into sexual activities. They might run out and have sex with all kinds of strangers where they were very prudish before and they never had sex with anybody. All of a sudden, their sexual appetite increases tenfold, and they're out there looking for different people, whereas they never did that before. So I would say that it might present itself like that, although we're going to talk about bipolar 1, 2, 3, and as you said, it's a spectrum. So bipolar 1 could be the extreme case, like I told you, the man directing traffic in the street.
Well, if I may interrupt, because I don't want people to get confused, you're talking about
right.
just the mania side of it. Because, again, bipolar disorder, which used to be called manic depression, manic depressive syndrome,
right.
It's because it's got the two. So the two poles are the mania and the depression.
Right.
Let's go to break. I want to go to break and come back, and we'll continue to clarify this, okay? You guys, we're going to go.
Okay.
We're going to come back. We're with Clinical Assistant Professor of Psychiatry at NYU Medical Center, Dr. Carol Berman. Today's topic is bipolar disorder. I'm Tara Marie Segundo. You're listening to Tara Marie Live. Jot down this call-in line. It's 888-411-7242. We'll be right back after this on American Latino Radio, Channel 154.
This is Channel 154, American Latino Radio.
If you have kids in your life, you need to know about the only multivitamin patented for learning and academic performance to help your kids do their very best in school. Used for over 10 years in public schools, Potential is designed by a doctor to support brain function by nourishing a growing brain with active vitamins, important minerals, and antioxidants from superfoods and berries. Designed to be clean and wholesome, Potential doesn't contain additives, preservatives, artificial colors, flavors, and sugar found in most other kids' vitamins. Being a kid today isn't easy, so give the kids you love every advantage with Potential. To learn more, visit mykidspotential.com and use the special coupon code RADIO. Or call 877-877-4566 to order. That's mykidspotential.com or call 877-877-4566. Help your kids do their very best to succeed. Give them potential today.
I am an American Latino, and I can vote. I was born in this country or was naturalized here. I'm old enough. In elections in the coming years, over 2 million American Latinos will vote in the state of Texas. But many more should. In California, nearly 65% of the Latino population is U.S. born, yet only half of those eligible vote. I am an American Latino, and I will vote. There are issues that affect me and my family. The men and women who are elected to hold state and federal offices will decide these issues. War and peace, health and wellness, immigration, energy and the environment, civil and labor rights, and much more. The American Latino vote is the American Latino voice. 25 million American Latinos will be eligible to vote in the next presidential election. But sadly, fewer than 50% of eligible American Latino voters turned out for the last one. I am an American Latino, and I must vote. And now, back to Tara Marie Live on American Latino Radio.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to Tara Marie Live. I'm your host, Tara Marie Segundo, here on American Latino Radio, channel 154 on the Sirius XM dial. Keep it locked in here. The call-in line to the studio is 888-411-7242. You can call toll-free nationwide. Talk to me, my guest, anytime. I'm here from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 5 Pacific, every Monday through Friday. The show's about mental, emotional, physical, social, and spiritual health. Today, we're actually talking about mental health, most specifically bipolar disorder, with Dr. Carol Berman. She's a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU Medical Center and also is in private practice at NYU, in New York City, excuse me. So, Dr. Carol, we're talking bipolar disorder. Again, I'm asking for, again, not so much the people who are hospitalized, because we realize that's the end of the spectrum. And I think it would be quite obvious to a family member or a person if you're suffering that much. But again, so bipolar disorder, the nature of bipolar disorder is that it has, because it used to be called manic depression, it has these manic episodes and these depressive episodes. Would you say that's mainly what separates bipolar disorder from clinical depression?
Yes, clinical depression, they're just downs. People are depressed. They have a depressed mood, and they have problems sleeping and eating. We could get into that later. But manic depression, bipolar, they have an up mood as well. So they'll alternate between up and down, whereas depressed, they're just down. They don't have any up moods.
Got it. So bipolar disorder, you guys, the distinguishing factor between bipolar disorder and just clinical depression, which I've suffered with, is that there are these there's this mania, there's these manic episodes. Now, before we get, so we talked about some of them, what a manic episode might look like. You said excessive shopping, even when one can't afford it, excessive gambling, talkative, can't get a word in edgewise, not sleeping, crazy sexual activity, anything I would imagine that would put someone possibly in danger, but they seem to feel like they're invincible. But
exactly.
But how, is there a definition within the definition of bipolar disorder? How long, for instance, would a manic episode last? How long would a depressive episode last?
Well, usually a manic episode would last about 7 days to 2 weeks.
Okay.
And depressive episodes usually last about 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. So we're figuring 7 to 14 days on either end of the spectrum.
Okay. All right. And so it sounds like the manic episodes are typically slightly shorter than the depressive episodes. Probably, yeah. You know what probably happens? Probably what happens is during the manic episode, because I was watching Dr. Phil the other day, I was watching a rerun of Dr. Phil, and the woman who had bipolar disorder, I specifically DVR'd it because I knew it was going to be about bipolar disorder. She did not go to sleep for 4 straight days.
Yeah, I've had patients like that.
Yeah, see, I would imagine the reason the depressive episodes are longer and more intense than the manic episodes is because the manic episodes wear the person out. It's literally like the part of the depressive episode is excessive, extreme fatigue.
Yes, it is that too. But, you know, sometimes if a person has pure depression, if they stay up for a couple of days, they actually help themselves with the depression. I don't suggest that people stay up trying to get rid of their depression. But there's a strange effect of staying up one or two days where it might be a bit of an antidepressant like that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But so you get what I'm saying, that the mania probably fries out the person's adrenal glands, probably just fries the person out, which is why then the depressive episode persists longer than the typical manic episode.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Now, is there a typical age of onset? Okay, so again, the mania would be shopping, gambling, crazy behaviors. It would be something that's out. What, is it fair to say it's something that's possibly out of the ordinary for the person? It's not just a manic mood, but rather manic behaviors. Are behaviors always part of the mania?
Yeah, it's the mood, and usually it's some kind of acting out with some kind of behavior. It's, you know, talking, gambling, sexuality. It's usually behavior as well as mood.
Okay, so it's, again, it's not just the mood swings. It's behavior. Could it even be possibly lashing out at loved ones? Just because the lady on the Dr. Phil show that had bipolar disorder, she didn't do any crazy behaviors like that, but she would just go on these tears where she would lash out at her children.
Right, a person could be very irritable and be screaming at people, but beyond what they usually are.
Okay. And the depressive episodes, can you describe them? For some people, can they be as mild as just feeling really depressed? And then I imagine some people can't even get out of bed for a couple weeks.
Yeah. Well, the bipolar ones have, bipolar one has a lengthier and more severe episode of depression. So that, right, they can't get out of bed, they feel terrible, they can't eat, they might feel like agitated, they could have feelings of worthlessness and guilt, and they could have diminished ability to think, and then they could have suicidal ideation, which is really scary when they start getting into that.
Yeah, okay. So that's bipolar 1. So bipolar 1 has more severe depressive episodes, more severe symptoms, and possibly longer, you're saying?
Yes, and bipolar 1s also have more severe mania. So this is way out there with, you know, like what I was describing with the guy in the street, and way out there with the depression. So extreme depression, where they're really, really in pain with the depression, and might feel suicidal, and might be sleeping for a week, too.
Got it. All right, so bipolar 1, the extremes are more extreme. What about bipolar 2?
And bipolar 2, it's much lighter. So bipolar 2, it could just be mood, like you feel depressed for a couple of days, then you feel elevated for a couple of days. And you don't have to go through these extremes. Like, with, as I said, the bipolar 1, they could be hallucinating. They're really out there. Bipolar 2, they could just have a mild talkativeness or a little bit of gambling or a little bit of shopping. And then the depressive state is not as intense and severe.
All right, so bipolar 2 is similar, but it's distinguished because the swings are less. So the extremes are not as much. Now, with bipolar 2, could it be more so confined to moods and less so with acted out with behaviors? So in other words, you've just got people that feel great versus feel really depressed, but they don't necessarily act out. Is that possible?
Yeah. That could be possible, definitely.
Okay, so that's bipolar 2. See, I would imagine that among those of us just walking around that are possibly suffering with undiagnosed bipolar disorder, we're more in the number 2 category because, again, I would think that the behaviors, the extreme behaviors, you know, if you've got somebody who all of a sudden goes out on a sexual tear for 2 weeks and does crazy things that are out of characteristic for her, I would think she would take notice and family would take notice. I would think that bipolar 2 is probably more common and also more undiagnosed because the person may be described as moody.
That's right. And a lot of times it goes without diagnosis, and those people think they're okay. But now another factor that we should mention is substance abuse. A lot of people with bipolar 1 and bipolar 2 will go out and start drinking, trying to alter whatever mood or behavior they're having. and thinking that the alcohol is going to help them. And it actually makes everything much worse. It makes them much more depressed. It makes them much more manic.
Right.
Or they could start doing, let's say they're manic, they could start doing cocaine to enhance the experience, and then they'll really go out there.
Yeah.
You know, they'll take some kind of upper that pushes them out to the extreme further.
Now, do you see, now you're making me think, do you suspect, because I deal with a lot of food addicts.
Yeah.
Do you think that possibly people who struggle with addiction, there is a higher likelihood that there's also bipolar 2 happening at the same time?
It could very well be, and that they're going into some addiction instead. And, eating disorders are linked to it.
Yeah.
Substance abuse disorders are linked to bipolar. A lot of things are linked to it, and we have, you know, like a secondary diagnosis for the person. They could have bipolar 1, and then we'll have substance abuse, or we'll have eating disorder as the next diagnosis down.
Because what it's making me think, now I'm starting to think, because I've always, you know, addictions are just manifestations of deeper mental issues happening.
Exactly.
And so what I'm starting to, I was just wondering if in the literature that you've seen as a psychiatrist, if there is a high correlation between people who have bipolar 1 or 2 and also have an addiction. And I'm wondering if when people are treated as addicts, if we're being remiss, if we don't examine if they possibly, to see if they possibly have one of these disorders.
Well, they have lots of programs in hospitals called dual diagnosis programs where they'll have, you know, a person will have either depression or bipolar disorder on the first axis, and then they'll have substance abuse or addictive disorders on the next axis. And we make these kind of diagnoses so that it's a dual diagnosis.
Right.
Not only do they have bipolar, but then they'll have some addiction as a secondary thing. And unless we treat the first thing, the bipolar thing or the depression thing, we'll never even touch the addiction problem.
Yeah. See, I like that you said that, because I always tell people who are addicts, because I used to be a compulsive eater. There's always something under it. Like we don't engage in self-destructive behaviors just for nothing. We're always trying to ameliorate some feeling that we're having.
That's right. Self-medicate in some
right.
way with either food or drugs or sex or whatever the person uses.
Right. Now, what is bipolar 3?
Now, bipolar 3 has come into the media. You'll see it in newspapers, you'll see it online, you'll see it in magazines. We don't really use it technically in our books and in our literature, but I just wanted to talk about it a little bit because you'll see it when you start reading about bipolar. But if you look in our textbooks, if you look in DSM-5, which is like our Bible that we make all the diagnoses with, we don't have a bipolar 3. But I found it very interesting when I was looking around on the internet that they're talking about bipolar 3. And this we would call cyclothymia, which is the mild swinging up and down. And it's a different disorder than bipolar, but it's what the media is calling bipolar 3, which is a light cycling.
So So let me ask you this. So could cyclothymia be, I don't know how fast, because I've heard the term, I've heard people say rapid cycling bipolar disorder, and I thought that meant like from one minute to the next. Really, when I started researching, rapid cycling bipolar disorder is talking about over the span of a year.
Exactly. So it's like if you have 4 or more episodes in 1 year of either depression or mania, that's called rapid cycling.
Right. So now I'm starting to think, okay, so cyclothymia, tell me if this is accurate. I used to work with a guy, nicest guy ever. You could say one thing, it would set him off, and he would just change. It was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and then 2 minutes later, he was nice again. It was the weirdest, most bizarre thing I've ever observed.
Now, that could really be something like a personality disorder, which is another one of my books that we haven't talked about, Jeff.
Uh-huh.
But personality disorders, so that, you know, like maybe had something called the borderline personality disorder, and maybe was just triggered by something you said or triggered by something that was going on internally. And so he'd be nice one minute because he would perceive you in one way, and then he'd be nasty the next minute because maybe he perceived you a different way, but it was all coming from inside his head. You weren't changing.
Well, right. And the reason I thought, what I noticed about it and what was notable to me was how rapid it was. Like, literally, it was from 0 to 100 in a matter of seconds.
Yeah, I don't know if that's cyclothymia, because cyclothymia takes a little more than that. That's why I'm thinking personality disorder, because he's perceiving you differently, and that's what's making him act in different ways and have different moods.
Okay.
Whereas a cyclothymic person is like going up and down, but not within minutes, like
okay,
within days, maybe.
Okay, so again, go back to a cyclothymic person. So what would someone walking around with, again, in the lay literature, bipolar 3, but really in the medical literature, cyclothymia, what would that look like? Because then now you're making me suspect there are even more of us. Talk about bipolar 2 walking around undiagnosed. There are probably a lot of us with cyclothymia walking around undiagnosed. Because again, as the symptoms get kind of watered down, this is a person who may just be described as moody. So explain what that would look like. What does that picture look like?
Well, that's moody. So it would take a couple of days for them to change. They wouldn't change instantaneously like that because it doesn't happen. But their mood, like they could be cranky for 2-3 days. Then all of a sudden the next 2-3 days, they're like, happy and running around doing happy things. Not anything dangerous like our manic people. But, all of a sudden they're friendly, they're smiling at you, they're shaking your hand. And 2 days ago they were cranky, but they don't change minute by minute. It takes them a couple of days to change like that.
Now, I have a question, though, because I get that way based on circumstances. Like if stuff happens and I get in a bad mood, I'm in a bad mood. Is it independent? Is cyclothymia because it's independent of outside circumstances? So in other words, there wasn't something that would have created that bad mood, or that would have propelled that.
It's mostly coming from internal signals. It could be internal neurotransmitters. All of a sudden you get a large amount of dopamine, for example, one of our neurotransmitters, and you feel good. And maybe it's from eating properly. Maybe, go back to eating and not eating. So maybe you're eating very well and you get a big influx of dopamine and some other good chemical, serotonin, and you're feeling good. So that will last you a day or two, maybe 3 days. Then all of a sudden you're not eating well, or you're drinking some alcohol or smoking cigarettes or abusing your body in some way. And then, you start going down. So I would think it would happen more like that.
Okay, so cyclothymia has less to do with outside stuff and more to do. So basically, cyclothymia, can we say it's a teenager? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like a teenager.
I mean, teenagers. Teenagers are odd little people. One day out of nowhere, they're feeling great, and out of nowhere, they're not. It's like the world is coming to an end.
That's like a teenager.
Okay, so what I want to talk about when we come back is how that relates to bipolar disorder, and I want to get some insights as to what's going on in the brain chemistry of these people, because one of the things I saw in Dr. Phil the other day when I DVR'd this old show because I saw it was about bipolar was that they can really distinguish a lot from brain scans. It's really fascinating. So you guys, we're going to come back. We're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Carol Berman about bipolar disorder. The call-in line is 888-411-7242. I'm Tara Marie Segundo. This is Tara Marie Live, here on American Latino Radio, Channel 154.
This is American Latino Radio, Channel 154.
Did you wake up this morning with sore knees, hands, or other sore joints? Don't go another day feeling this way. Join thousands of satisfied customers and try NovaJoint. Designed by a doctor to nourish and lubricate your joints, NovaJoint works fast, without glucosamine, chondroitin, or any of the other ingredients that have disappointed people for years. Customers love NovaJoint because it works fast and it's so easy to take. Here's what a customer in New Mexico wrote. My knees felt great after a couple of weeks, and after a few months, I forgot they were ever sore. I would recommend this product to anyone with stiff, achy joints. NovaJoint really works. So don't wait another day. Go to NovaJoint.com and use the coupon code RADIO or call 855-657-7700. Don't wait to feel great. That's NovaJoint.com and love how you feel.
I am an American Latino, and I have fought for this country since its founding. I sided with Governor de Galvez in support of the revolution against the English to help create this great country, and with Captain Jorge Farragut in the War of 1812 to keep the English from coming back. I fought at the Alamo against the armies of Santa Anna to declare a free Texas, and I knew the pain of brother against brother fighting on both sides of the Civil War. 500,000 American Latinos marched off to World War II as part of the Greatest Generation, and many did not come back. I have soldiered, sailed, and flown to war wherever I've been sent. I'm still fighting in Afghanistan. Since the American Civil War, I have been presented our nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor, over 60 times, more than 40 of those times posthumously. I am an American Latino, and I dare you to say otherwise. A message from American Latino Radio, Sirius XM Channel 154 at AmericanLatinoRadio.net. Got a question? Don't be shy. It's your health. Call Tara Marie now, 1-888-411-7242. That number again throughout the U.S., 1-888-411-7242.
Hey, welcome back. Just sitting down in my chair after a commercial break, always late. I'm Tara Marie Segundo. You're listening to Tara Marie Live. We're here on American Latino Radio, channel 154. My show's about all aspects of health, mental, emotional, physical, social, spiritual. If you're just tuning in, we've been talking with clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU Medical Center and also a psychiatrist in private practice, Dr. Carol Berman. We're talking about bipolar disorder and related disorders. A lot of Latinos are walking around undiagnosed. It has to do with the stigma in our community and really in this country. I mean, it makes me sad that there's a stigma in this country against people who suffer with mental illness, because it's really no different than if you have diabetes or high blood pressure. There's just something off. It's a chemistry issue. Your body's just a big chemistry set. And when your brain chemistry is off, you have mental issues, and there's nothing to be ashamed of. You just fix the brain chemistry. So, Dr. Berman, we were talking about cyclothymia, which, again, is more so with the mood swings. OK, so the cyclothymia is the mood swings. You're saying for a few days the person will be up, for a few days the person will be down, then up, then down. And it has more to do with what's going on the inside than outside stuff. So it's not like, because I get like that, like the other day recently, like my computer crashed. I was in a bad mood for a week. You know what I mean? It's not because of outside stuff.
Okay. Yeah, it's not really. If it's outside stuff, it's something else. This is internal mood swings. And if the person has it where it could all of a sudden turn into a real depressive episode, or it turns into a real manic episode, then they get classified over into the bipolar 1 or 2. So some cyclothymics, we didn't talk yet about what age this starts at, but it usually starts in teenage years or early adulthood. So a person could start off, like you were saying, like a teenager, a cyclothymic, yes. But if it keeps going and the person gets it more intensively, where they have a real depressive episode or they have a real manic episode, then we'll put them in the category of bipolar 1 and bipolar 2.
I got it.
And we'll treat them differently. We'll start treatment.
Got it. That makes sense. Do you find that it's more prevalent in, I saw some research that it's more prevalent in women to men, kind of like 3 to 2, like every 3 women, 2 men get it.
Well, it is a little bit, but I think what happens is that women will come forward more quickly than men, and they'll say, okay, I have this problem, let me get treatment. Hispanic women or any kind of women are more likely to admit that they have whatever they have, whereas the guys are likely to say, no, I don't have any problem, and maybe go have a drink or something. So I think that we're diagnosing it more in women because women have the courage to come forward and say, I have this or that.
See, I thought you were going to say, that's not what I expected. I expected you to say, yes, it's more prevalent in women because of hormones. Because I would imagine, you know, women, generally speaking, I think struggle with more mood disorders just because of hormones and such, no?
Well, depression, yes. Depression, more women have depression. Now, bipolar is a little different. Bipolar, we're finding out, is almost related to schizophrenia. When they were looking at the genes of bipolar people and looking at the genes of schizophrenic people, they found that they haven't quite figured out which gene or which genes are causing these problems, but they figure out there's a similarity in genes between the people with schizophrenia and the people with bipolar. Now, we didn't think that in the past. We thought that bipolar was more related to the affective disorders, like the depressive disorders, and it's in a category with that. Now all of a sudden we're thinking, no, it's actually related more to the psychotic disorders like schizophrenia. So, you know, we're getting different categories going, and they have this new book, like I was talking about, the DSM-5, and, you know, it shifted over because we have more information about the brain. And as you were just saying, we were doing these brain scans of all kinds, PET scans, MRIs, and all that, and we're finding big brain differences in people with bipolar disorder than we thought.
Yeah, well, I don't mean to interrupt you, sweetie. What was interesting is like I said, on the Dr. Phil show that I DVR'd, first of all, it was an old episode. I think it was from maybe 2008. I mean, it was pretty old, but maybe it was more recent than that, like 2010 or something. But it was definitely at least 4 years old. But they put up on the screen the brain scans of the guy with bipolar disorder versus the normal brain scans. And this is basic brain imaging, like MRIs, yes?
Yeah.
Functional MRI studies, and different parts of his brain were lit up than right. in the normal control subject. So is it activity? Okay, so in a person with bipolar disorder, is it brain activity that's different as opposed to quote unquote a normal patient, or is it brain chemistry, or is it both?
Well, it's brain chemistry and it's brain anatomy, which is the really surprising thing that we've been finding out, because the frontal cortex, which is the front part of the brain that we all think of all the time, the cortex, that is actually thinner and smaller in people with bipolar disorder and people with schizophrenia than people who are normal, so-called normals. So we're finding that, and also brain activity, which is a different thing, like with neurotransmitters and chemistry, that is different in people with bipolar and people with depression and people with schizophrenia. And it tends to, the front part of the brain doesn't tend to light up as much as the back part of the brain, and the temporal lobes light up more. So that we're getting more activity in different parts of the brain rather than the front. So a so-called normal person would have a lot of activity in the front of the brain. Like you and I are talking now, probably if somebody looked at our brains, they'd see a lot of activity in the front of our brain.
Yes.
Whereas if we had bipolar or schizophrenia, they would see a lot of activity in the back of our brain.
Yeah, because I've...
Anatomy is different. Yeah.
Well, I've always heard that the frontal lobe, the front of the brain, is sort of the executive functioning center. It helps us with reasoning, decision-making,
right.
Self-control, impulse control, et cetera.
Right, exactly. That's what it does. So if you're a person having a manic episode, your frontal lobes are not working, but the back is working, so you might go off and gamble, you know, $10,000, which you don't even have, because you don't have your executive function say, hey, this is not a good idea. You don't have $10,000 to spend. You might be blowing your money or running around with some guy you'd never run around with.
So brain activity, but also brain chemistry. I know that with, for instance, depression, low serotonin is the culprit. What's going on with brain chemistry in someone with bipolar disorder? Is it also, I would imagine, low serotonin during the depressive episodes. What else? What else is altered in their brain?
Right. And then we have a bunch of neurotransmitters, or maybe 12 or 13 that we've identified so far. So things like dopamine and things like norepinephrine, you know, these things might be increased when a person is having the manic episode of serotonin also. And then when they're having the depressive episode, those kind of chemicals will be reduced. So
got it.
They're hardly moving. And this also leads into the treatment. And what we do with bipolar people is we use anticonvulsants to treat them, like Depakote, Lamictal, Neurontin. These are all anticonvulsants that we use. So we're thinking that a bipolar episode is almost like a convulsion.
Oh, yes. Interesting. It's almost like a convulsion in the brain.
Right. And that's why we use anticonvulsants, which control the brain. So it's like the brain, what happens in a convulsion is that an electrical current goes right through the brain and a bunch of neurotransmitters are released in the brain. So then you get a lot of dopamine, you get a lot of serotonin, you get a lot of stuff. So you don't want that stuff all at once. It's not a good idea. Like just like when a person has a convulsion, very bad. It's very dangerous. So it's also dangerous if the brain is going to go on, like, just giving off these neurotransmitters in large quantities. They're wasting the neurotransmitters, and it's dangerous. So we use anticonvulsants, which help the person maintain stability and a stable mood.
Yeah, I knew a guy, a photographer I used to work with. I find a lot of creative people suffer with these disorders.
Exactly.
He was a photographer, and he was on lithium. He had bipolar disorder. This was back in the 90s. I think back then we were calling it manic depression. And he didn't like to take his lithium because he said it messed up his creativity as an artist.
Yes, and lithium, we don't really like to give lithium that much anymore, although it's the gold standard treatment for manic depression, bipolar. Mm-hmm. But what happens, lithium is very toxic to the kidneys, and it's toxic to the thyroid gland. So you have to constantly monitor the blood level, which we could do, you know, when we put a person on lithium, we take blood tests periodically to make sure that they have the right amount of lithium in the bloodstream. But it could still be, I have a poor guy who, he has destroyed kidneys as a result of lithium.
Oh.
I have another woman who has a destroyed thyroid as a result of taking lithium.
Oh, yeah. I see. I understand. And so they probably also have to monitor these organs by blood measure pretty regularly as well.
Right. So yeah. We take the level. So that we want to use anticonvulsants more these days than lithium, because lithium could be very toxic, and some doctors are not measuring the levels, and people are getting toxicity, and, you know, it's not good.
Now what is hypomania?
Hypomania means a little bit of mania. It sounds weird. It sounds like it's something else, but it's from the Greek word hypo, H-Y-P-O, which means a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And so that term got stuck on things, I think, back in the late 1800s or something, and we still use it. But when we're saying he's hypomanic, when we use that term, we mean he's a little bit manic. So he might be talking like crazy, or he might be, you know, just disregarding normal behavior. But he's not real manic, like he's out there conducting traffic in the street.
Okay, so that would be more seen in bipolar 2.
Right.
Bipolar 2. Okay. Now, is bipolar disorder hard to diagnose? Because for some reason,
I was
confused when I was watching this Dr. Phil, because here they're showing with clear brain scans that this guy has brain activity that's different than the normal brain. So to me, that shouldn't be so hard to diagnose. Why is bipolar disorder so hard to diagnose? Because I heard somewhere it can take like up to a decade to get a real clean diagnosis on this is the issue. Why would it take so long?
Exactly, because it can look like other things. It could be very confusing. It could be like a chameleon and look like either just plain old depression if you don't see the upside of it. It could look like schizophrenia if a person comes in hallucinating their brains out, and you say, well, he's hearing voices and he's seeing things, maybe he's a schizophrenic. But no, then what happens with a bipolar is that they will clear up when they're not having an episode. So a schizophrenic person, even if they're taking medication, you would never like look at this man or woman and think, oh, this is a perfectly normal person. Whereas a bipolar person, even if they're off their meds, you could look at them when they're not having an episode and say, this person is perfectly normal. But you would never confuse a schizophrenic person for a normal person, because you would not. You would just think they're completely different. So sometimes they'll come in to the hospital or to the doctor's office, and, you know, they're in one of these different states. It's kind of like the blind men with the elephant. You ever hear that story?
No.
Okay, so you have 15 blind men and an elephant. And you have these blind men go up to the elephant, and everybody's touching a different part of the elephant. One touches the trunk. He says, oh, it's a snake. They have to identify what kind of animal it is. Another one touches the leg, and he says, you know, it's a tree. Another one touches the belly, and he thinks it's some other kind of thing, because only the blind men are only seeing different parts of it. So same thing when you're trying to diagnose a bipolar person, the doctors are like the 15 blind men. Each one is like touching a different area, mm-hmm. seeing a different thing, and can't see the elephant.
I would also expect one of the reasons that it's hard to diagnose to be that people probably enjoy the mania, therefore they don't. Let's say somebody who's just bipolar 2, who has more of the light swings, the lesser extreme.
Yeah.
I would imagine that the people enjoy the manic episodes. It sounds kind of fun. It sounds kind of like a buzz. You know, it sounds fun. So I would imagine perhaps they only go into the doctor complaining of depression. if they go to the doctor at all.
That's right. They have fun with it for a long time. So, like, and they could be more creative when they're hypomanic.
Uh-huh.
So they could often write a book, or they could write a symphony, or they could paint a picture, and they could do, and as you said, a lot of creative people are extremely prolific in creating all kinds of things. So they're having fun, they're doing their creativity, and then only when they're down would they complain about it. Sometimes they don't even complain about it when they're down.
Right. Right. So that's probably what leads to a lot of the misdiagnoses, is that people don't report the mania because it feels good. And if, again, if it's just bipolar 2 and it's not the kind of mania, they're not doing things that are getting them into trouble, like crazy sexual activity or crazy spending or gambling or such, they're probably enjoying the mania, the feeling of it. And then they're just reporting the depression. And then it goes, because I know this, because when I was diagnosed with clinical depression, originally, he misdiagnosed me as bipolar, and he put me on those anticonvulsants, and it made me very ill. If you give someone who doesn't have bipolar disorder those drugs, it'll take you down.
Absolutely.
It will take
That's
you down.
So he terrible.
Yeah, he misdiagnosed me. Yeah, I should have filed a malpractice. I didn't, and now the poor guy died, so whatever. But again, like, you can't give those drugs to people who don't have bipolar, because it'll really screw you up.
Exactly. And I have seen many patients coming in who were misdiagnosed, and they gave them all kinds of weird medicines. And I have to take people off meds and, rearrange their medication, because some guy who didn't know what he was doing, or some doctor who was not even a psychiatrist, was giving out medication.
Right, right. Listen, we're going to go and come back. You guys, after this, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor. We're going to come back, continue our discussion about bipolar disorder. We're talking with Dr. Carol Berman. She's a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU Medical Center. Her website for more information is carolberman.com, C-A-R-O-L-W.
With a W Berman. In the middle.
Yeah,
Carol
that's,
W.
Yeah.
Berman.
That's what it just is. Carol W, C-A-R-O-L-W-B-E-R-M-A-N.com, carolwberman.com for more information about her. And you guys, check out my website. Go to taramarie.com, T-A-R-A-M-A-R-I-E.com. Sign up for my mailing list. I just sent out a great newsletter today, so I write it every week. TaraMarie.com. Sign up for my mailing list. In the newsletter, I talk about all the things I talk about on this show. Free stuff, mental, emotional, physical, social, spiritual wellness. TaraMarie.com. We'll be right back after this. I'm Tara Marie Segundo. You're listening to Tara Marie Live here on American Latino Radio, channel 154. Keep it locked in right there.